Good afternoon. My name is Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. To learn more about my organization, please visit our website at www.cfif.org. And after being gone for about a month, not on purpose, just the way the weeks happen to fall, it's great to be back here behind the wheel and hosting Your Turn, the program that I've dubbed Meeting Nonsense with Common Sense. And we've got 2 hours of fun set up for you this afternoon. We're going to start by talking about things going on inside the Beltway, those dealing with ethics and pork barrel issues, which I think will be of very big interest to most listeners, at least those of us that pay our taxes and don't like to have to continue to fund some of that stuff that's going on there. At the bottom half of this hour, I'm going to be joined on the phone by Judge Robert Dierker. He's with the 22nd Judicial Circuit of Missouri, and he has authored a book called The Tyranny of Tolerance, and he's breaking the code of silence to expose the liberal judicial assault. It's a fascinating book and a very interesting issue. I hope you'll stay tuned with us for that. At the top of the hour, I'm going to be joined on the phone by George Scarborough. As most people in the listening district may know, at least those that are within District 3, George is a Republican candidate running to take over Holly Benson's seat. He's going to be with us from 5 until we run out of questions. So starting at 5, you can start dialing up and asking the candidate the questions that you have. So hopefully you'll stay tuned for the next 2 hours, this version of Your Turn, and please feel free to call in and join in the conversation at 623-1330. My first guest has been with us before on the program talking about some similar issues. He's with the National Taxpayers Union. He's Vice President for Communications, and he has helped to develop the 350,000-member National Taxpayers Union, and he works on their public relations and promotional strategies. And he joins us this afternoon to talk about pork barrel spending reforms and other things that are happening, at least from a tax perspective or anti-tax perspective, however we want to word that, there in Washington, D.C. That'll ultimately affect our pocketbooks. Mr. Sepp, thanks so much for joining us again this afternoon.
Always a pleasure.
Well, what's going on these days? I think right before I left the house to head to the radio station, I thought I read something. This is a little bit off topic of exactly what we're going to talk about, but am I right that something in the Senate, maybe Senate Bill 1, if I have it right, or I think it's Senate Bill 1 that they were looking at, even as of today, has to do with some of the stuff going on with ethics and that some of it might be getting cut out of the bill?
Yes, we're very concerned because we've made actually quite excellent progress on one of these ethical issues, that is barring congressional felons from getting pensions that are funded by taxpayers. That seems like the mother of all no-brainer issues, but we have been lobbying for this for the better part of 10 years now, trying to get members of Congress to agree that if you disgrace your office, if you rip off taxpayers, if you abuse the public trust and get convicted of a crime, the least you can do is forfeit the pension that all of us have to chip in for. And we got the Senate to enact an amendment to that bill, S-1, by John Kerry. It passed 87-0. We're looking for the House to consider an even better no pensions for felons bill very soon. But now, yes, we are concerned that S-1 might be gutted and this provision might be taken out. I can't imagine members of Congress would be this dumb, but unfortunately, they surprise us every day.
You know, my memory is not always the best, but am I correct that, you know, part of the platform that Nancy Pelosi said when she walked in on her first day was, you know, not we are going to clean house, but we're going to clean up the House and the Senate? You know, the simple fact that we are going to deal with ethics reform, things that, you know, she alleged and others didn't happen under Republican control. What's it looking like, Pete?
Yeah, she pledged to make this the most ethical Congress ever. Those were her exact words. Right now, we're seeing only limited progress toward those goals. Earmark reform, that's reforming the process where special interests append earmarks to spending bills for their own personal gain. Well, Nancy Pelosi proposed at least the first step to require that those earmarks be disclosed in the legislative process rather than at the last minute when they have to pass it by a final vote. Okay, that's a start. We'll give them that. Harry Reid, Pelosi's counterpart on the Senate side, decided that that was too much to accept. Senator Jim DeMint, a Republican from South Carolina, said, okay, I'm going to offer this as an amendment to your bill. The exact same language that your Democratic colleague Nancy Pelosi managed to pass through the House. And Reid, the fellow Democrat, still tried to block the package. Thank goodness he was overruled. But now, as you say, they're trying another tactic, trying to strip the bill down or call what is known as cloture. When they do that, if you can get 60 votes in the Senate, that means debate on the bill is over, no more amendments, you got to proceed and vote up or down.
And I'm sorry, is that provision the one dealing with, you know, the simple fact that people have to be made aware of something being inserted into the bill? Is that still in S1? So if they were to call cloture, I mean, is it there or is it gone?
As of right now, it is there. But these sessions are going so late. We are constantly watching what they're doing. The other thing is they could offer what's called an amendment in the nature of a substitute. Reid comes up with a weak ethics package that he likes. He gets enough people in the Senate to vote for that, and suddenly S1 becomes an entirely different bill.
And then it probably doesn't mirror anything like what the House may be considering or may pass, and then in conference we get a watered-down nothing.
That's right. That's right. And that is our greatest fear. I think that we have a few Democrats, especially the conservatives in the House Blue Dog Caucus, as they're known, I think they're very serious about proceeding with good, solid ethics reform and budget process reform. Whether they will be enough to counter the other folks in their party who are just trying to look good without actually changing anything, that remains to be seen.
Well, there was an interesting article in the paper yesterday. I think it was in USA Today, which I picked up while I was out of town. And it was, senators will have to pay for their seats in skyboxes if ban approved. Pete, is that something that's working its way into this bill as well? Apparently what they're saying is that, you know, lawmakers have long enjoyed seats in luxury skyboxes that have been paid for by lobbyists and corporations. All this, you know, basically people turning their back on apparently the $50 limit on gifts that they can accept. But there is some talk now that they will ban these expensive sports tickets, or, you know, make them pay for them. Is that part of this bill as well?
Yeah, this is, of course, one of those slippery issues, just like congressional travel. If you're currently a lawmaker and you get a gift of attending a football game, you have to pay the face value of whatever the equivalent ticket might be. Well, there really aren't equivalents for skyboxes. They're owned by companies. And so for the price of maybe a good seat on the 50-yard line, they get to go to a penthouse and enjoy the football game that way. And now they're looking to try and say, well, you can't even go into these skyboxes anymore.
But when you talk face value on a ticket, I mean, are they talking true face value, the listed value on the ticket, or what you could get? I mean, I've seen in instances of playoffs and other places where, you know, tickets go for several thousand dollars.
Yes, and that's a big question. And this is, like I said, this is the same problem with congressional travel. For example, people like staffers who are not related to the trip or relatives, they can tag along on official aircraft just as you can tag along on Air Force One. As long as you're willing to pay, or someone pays for you, the value of a first-class airline ticket, well, that nowhere near covers the cost of operating those aircraft. And that's a very big loophole.
Pull out your crystal ball and give me a sense of Majority Leader Harry Reid. You know, what's in it for him, I guess, you know, trying to stop his own party's plan for earmark reform? Where does that get him?
Well, I think that he might have some personal interest in this. There, of course, have been allegations, not yet proven, that a lot of his family and cousins and whatnot have been in the lobbying business, and they might very well have connections to keeping the earmarking process the way it is. I can't believe that Harry Reid would look so bad in front of the American people simply for that. He must be getting pressure from other senators who don't want to come out and say up front that they're against earmark reform. I think that he is risking not only his political career, but the reputation of Democrats in the Senate. It's ridiculous.
What's happening on the other side of the aisle? I mean, where does the leadership of the Republican, you know, party seem to be on this issue of, well, let's talk about earmarks and then, and you know, pork barrel spending first?
Well, there is a conservative wing of the Republican Party called the Republican Study Committee. They've been very stalwart champions of true liberty-minded ethics reforms. By that I mean, if you want to reform the pension system, great, but reform it for all members of Congress so it doesn't cost taxpayers as much. You want to disclose earmarks? Great, but also allow the rules to give every member of Congress the chance to challenge these earmarks on the floor individually so they can be deleted from the bills. And unfortunately, the leaders of the GOP, especially on the House side, have not been very cooperative. I read just yesterday that Jeff Flake, who's probably one of the best libertarian conservative Republicans in the House of Representatives, got dumped from his seat on the Judiciary Committee, even though there were several people who were much more junior than him. I think that was a deliberate slap at Flake's efforts to get real earmark reform done.
Well, he was working, was he one of them, together with, I'm trying to remember the other gentleman's name, working on the no pension for felons.
Oh, there was... not only
started with a K, I'm thinking, but
Mark Kirk. Yes.
Kirk, that's what it is.
Yes.
Representative Kirk working very hard to on the issue of no pensions for felons, particularly, you know, in light of you know, Foley shenanigans, I think.
Yes.
He was one to really step forward. Okay, well, we need to take a very quick break. When we come back, I do want to revisit a little bit. I know in the last time you were with us, we did talk a lot about no pensions for felons, but, and you've updated us a little bit on that issue. But I do think, you know, there are a lot of folks, myself included, that we really don't appreciate, how many people we are talking about that are still on the taxpayer's dime, you know, despite you know, some felonies that they have committed, and I want to talk about the limitations that are currently in place and what we might get under new legislation. We are talking with Pete Sepp, and Pete is the Vice President for Communications of the National Taxpayers Union, a nonpartisan citizen group that promises an all-out fight to win the up or down vote for earmark reforms. We've got a question from Bill, but before I get to that, Pete, I do want to ask you to try and help put this in perspective, if you can. I know that NTU does a lot of financial studies. Have you been able to quantify at all when we talk about, let's talk about pensions first for felons, and we can go back to earmarks, but pensions for felons, any way to quantify that, what it costs the individual taxpayer, the amount of money that we are paying to these former members of Congress who have since left office?
Yes, it's not gigantic, about $1 million per year currently. Now, we are chipping in a subsidy of over $20 million for all congressional pensioners. That would break down to something like a quarter apiece for every United States taxpayer, a lot more for those who make a little more income because, as you know, the system is progressive. And at this issue, I think, is about ethics more than it is about the money. If they can't do this, if they can't take the roughly 20 people who've committed crimes and are on the retirement dole off that dole, I don't think any ethics reforms will get anywhere in Congress.
And some of these folks are serving time, am I not right? So
yes,
they're already on the taxpayer dime.
Yes, exactly. We're talking about James Traficant, for example. We're talking about Dan Rostenkowski, who did a stint in prison in the late 1990s. We're going all the way back to some of the folks who are still alive who were indicted and convicted in that ad scam scandal. People may remember that bribery scandal in which FBI agents posing as Arabs were offering suitcases full of money. Some of them are still alive, and some of them are still collecting pensions.
So it costs us. It costs each of us, you know, like you said, it may not, to some it may be pocket change, but to a lot of us it's not.
No.
Okay, go ahead, Bill. It's your turn.
Hey, great. I'm one of your listeners out here. Renee.
Always happy to have
that.
You. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Hey, I'm one of the 350,000 people that belong to NTU.
Do you really?
Yes, I do.
Oh, outstanding.
I do, and I go to for CAW too. I mean, Citizens Against Government Waste.
Okay. Great.
That's my two things I contribute to.
Now, do you read Dollars and Cents?
I sure do.
Ideas? Well, Pete is the author and editor of those.
Well, I get it every month or whenever it comes out.
Well, very good.
Yeah. Hey, two things I want you to address. Have you had any feedback from the VFW, American Legion, American Vets, DAV, on this pensions for felon politicians?
Well,
what are they doing? They ought to be up in arms because these are military type establishments.
Well, and Bill, that's an excellent point. I want to make sure people understand that, you know, if someone in the military is discharged, you know, they don't get to continue to draw their pension. Am I right, Pete?
If they're dishonorably, that can be one of the penalties. So I know veterans have actually emailed me and said, I think this is a disgrace, especially with Duke Cunningham, because if he were an officer in the United States Navy still and were convicted of those kinds of crimes that he committed in Congress, he would almost certainly be stripped of his military retirement pay.
Yes, you forfeit all rank. You forfeit rank and all your pension and privileges.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, going back to my original question, have you gotten any feedback from these organizations that are, you know, veteran type organizations?
So far, not from the organizations.
Yeah. See,
that would be a heck of an idea. I'm going to actually contact them myself, and maybe we can enlist a couple of them.
Sure, because they have a big following, and golly, I'm up in arms, and I'm a vet, and you know, Rostenkowski, you know yourself, is making over $100,000 in pension right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's terrible.
Yeah. Okay, you got that on your agenda. Here's another thing. Have you done a study on nepotism?
Yes, we've been able to uncover some of them.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the lawmakers who hire relatives. The interesting thing, of course, the rules don't allow one lawmaker to put a direct relative on their payroll, but what they sometimes do is hire them on for nothing. Or they share the employee with another member of Congress who pays that person, and that's how they get around the rules. Tom Foley, the former Washington representative who was Speaker of the House, kept his wife as his chief of staff, I believe. Didn't pay her a dime's worth of salary, but boy, she had a lot of influence in the way things were run.
Well, what I'm talking about is the tentacles that go from the congressperson to in nepotism for the relatives to get on with lobbying organizations and other organizations that are paying the person.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
Bill, haven't you termed them the fourth branch of government? Is that your term?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think you've coined that term, the lobbyists, the fourth branch of government.
Well, yeah. K Street is the fourth branch of government.
Right.
Yeah, and there are at least 250 former members of Congress who have some continuing connection to the federal government, either as consultants or lobbyists, or perhaps they're in a law firm that does federal contracting. So those tentacles extend even after they leave office. And that there is in the earmark reform package that Pelosi passed and ushered through the House a provision saying you can't vote or sponsor earmarks that would directly benefit a member of your family or a lobbyist who's a member of your family, and so on and so forth. But the thing with that, of course, is that all they have to do is shake hands with each other and say, okay, I'll sponsor your earmark that benefits your relatives if you sponsor mine.
And I don't mean to deny somebody the right to work, but I know, for example, I have a friend who was a Supreme Court clerk. He clerked for Clarence Thomas, and there was a waiting period. I think it was 2 years, 2.5 years almost, where he could not bring, you know, represent anybody before the U.S. Supreme Court because of, you know, just the appearance of impropriety or conflict. I assume there's no waiting period with members of Congress when they leave.
There is a waiting period, but again, they get around it in all kinds of clever ways. You know, they just don't go to the floor or the chambers of the House of Representatives, and they simply go to a firm that lobbies Congress, and they serve as a so-called consultant. Mm-hmm. As long as they don't get their hands directly dirty, they can almost go right into it.
I gotcha.
I hope this program is going all over the place, and the people are up in arms. I am up in arms, of course. And I don't hide the fact that I'm up in arms about the kings and queens of Congress. And again, I'll make another statement. It's really a sad story for the United States of America that we have 535 people in D.C., and that's the best out of, we'll say, 100 million people. We have 300 million people in the United States right now, and I'll say there's probably 100 million that's qualified in to run for Congress by their age, and we get 535 people out of 100 million. What a sad state of affairs this is, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. All right, well, that unfortunately is all the time that we have. I appreciate Bill's call very much, and Pete, I very much appreciate your time. And for the listeners out there like Bill who are outraged about this, I strongly encourage you to visit NTU's website at ntu.org and see what you can do to help. Pete, thanks so much for your time this afternoon, and keep up the good fight.
Thank you. My pleasure.